from KQED. Hey there, everyone. From KQED Public Radio, this is Political Breakdown. I'm Marisa Lagos.
And I'm Scott Schaefer. And tonight on The Breakdown, we are thrilled to have a couple of firsts to share with our listeners, one involving the presidential race, the other one, our guest, California Republican Party Chair Jessica Patterson.
That's right. Patterson took the reins of the state GOP back in February, but this was our first chance to sit down with the trailblazer, who's the first female, first Latina ever to lead the state party. But that is not all our news today, Scott.
That's right.
Today marks the start of a new partnership between The Breakdown and Change Research.
That's right. We're going to be partnering with the online polling firm ahead of the March 3rd primary here in California. And our first joint survey was released this morning and showing, well, to be honest, not so good news for California Senator Kamala Harris, who has slipped to fourth in the poll, which was conducted after last week's presidential debate, we should say.
Yeah, we'll get into what that meant for her. But here to chat with us about this poll and what we're going to be doing in the coming months with Change Research is Change co-founder Pat Riley. Pat, welcome to The Breakdown.
Thank you. I'm excited to be here.
So let's go over kind of the top line results. This was a statewide poll. You guys did both sort of general election voters, but Democratic primary voters, obviously, for these presidential numbers. We're
That's
talking
right.
3,325 Democratic voters right after that that debate last week, 12th to 15th of September. We see Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders almost tied for first place. She's got 25 points. He's around 23. Joe Biden is at 18. And then, you know, we go to Harris at 11, South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg at 10, and everyone else really down in the
single digits.
Yes.
So big takeaways here. I mean, you guys are polling in other states as well. We know it's still early, but not as early. What do you think? What does this tell us?
I think that these findings in California are very consistent with some of the polling that we're seeing across the country that has seen a steady climb for Warren. What's also true is that Harris in our last poll was up, and it's difficult to look at this snapshot and say that this is going to have an impact overall. But what's also true is that among the Harris fundamentals are pretty strong. In other words, a lot of people choose her as her second choice for candidates who are at the top.
But I mean, down is an understatement. She was at 23 points, I think, in
yeah,
July.
Yeah, she lost
right?
12 points.
Yeah.
And I know you've been polling over the last several months, mm-hmm. and the support for Elizabeth Warren has tripled since the poll in April. So that really, and that's gone been very steady.
Okay, so we said that this is the beginning of a partnership. We should probably explain that. So you guys
yes.
are a national firm. You work with paid clients, Democratic candidates, nonprofits, foundations. And then you've also done these media partnerships where you guys are sharing your results with us first in Nevada, the Nevada Independent is working
yeah.
with you guys, some other outlets. And so the idea being that we get the first crack at this, but you guys will put this out broadly. And then we actually get the opportunity to put a couple questions on. One of the questions we put on this time was around AB5, which is the bill that Governor Gavin Newsom signed this week, which is going to make independent contractors sort of come into the fold of employment around a lot of companies. Uber, Lyft, DoorDash have threatened a ballot measure. And interestingly, I think that there's sort of like, I don't know, a quarter of the electorate that says, yeah, let's do what these companies say in this poll. Another almost quarter that says, I would oppose any proposal these companies put on. And then a lot of people saying 44% saying we want to wait and see what it looks like.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious what you guys think, what that bodes for these companies.
And one thing is the companies themselves, maybe not quite so popular, even though many people use them.
Yeah. I think what this shows is that California voters recognize that they're wanting a different relationship with some of the technology that is ubiquitous in their lives. And I think these poll results show that they're really uncertain. They want more education. And if this were to go into a campaign setting, then it would be an epic battle to educate voters in one direction or another.
Yeah. All right. Just a minute left or so. Pat, can you just explain to us a little bit how you guys operate? There's a lot of suspicion in the general public around polling. You guys are doing online polling, which is a relatively new sort of
methodology.
Yeah,
Although it's growing, it's becoming more popular.
Yeah. So tell us, how do you guys work?
We do no phone calls whatsoever. Instead, we do all our surveying online. And we have two different technologies that allow us to do that. One is a bias correct engine that goes out and makes sure that we're getting a representative sample, a reflective sample of voters on Facebook, Instagram, on email, on any ad-supported platform.
And so that's how people respond to these.
That's
they
right.
click
so
on an ad.
Voters will get a solicitation from us and it'll say, make your voice heard here in San Francisco. You click on that survey and it's just like any other survey you've ever taken online. So it looks and feels very comfortable to you. That's as opposed to you're just sitting down to dinner, the phone rings, will you participate in a 30-minute survey?
And of course, these are likely voters. And how do you determine who is likely to vote?
Well, we can do our we ask a series of questions in the survey instrument itself to ensure that we're getting, and those questions include, are you identify as a Republican, Democrat, or Independent? Are you a male, female? Do you identify as African-American, Latino, et cetera? And then enter your zip code. And the way the bias correct engine works is it goes out across that massive universe of people who are online up to 5 hours a day and gets just the right reflective sample, whether you're in a small state legislative district or whether you're statewide in California.
Awesome. So we're going to look forward to doing these polls with you guys monthly over the coming months. And you know, I think, as Scott said, any poll's a snapshot. Take it with a grain of salt. What I think is interesting is to watch how these things progress over time as you ask the same question. And so we'll be doing that. And, you know, let us know, folks, if you got something that you're interested in asking, tweet it, Scott and I, and we'll try to get it into one of these polls. All right. Now we're going to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll be joined by California Republican Party Chair Jessica Patterson. You're listening to Political Breakdown from KQED Public Radio. Welcome back to Political Breakdown. I'm Marisa Lagos here with Scott Schaefer at KPCC, and we are so happy to be joined by the new chair of the California Republican Party, Jessica Patterson. Welcome to the Breakdown.
Thank you so much for having me.
So you took over the party this spring, and we want to get to all the work you're going to be doing and kind of what you want to do with that. But I think to a lot of people in California, you're a relatively new figure. They don't know a lot about you. So we thought we'd start with a little bit about where you came from and how you kind of got to this point. So you were born in Simi Valley?
L.A. No, yeah, I was born in L.A.
Okay.
I was born in Montebello. I grew up in a suburb of Los Angeles, Hacienda Heights.
Okay.
When I was in high school, my family moved from Hacienda Heights to Montebello.
Okay.
And the schools in Hacienda Heights were better than the schools in Montebello. So my mom took all five of us kids, and we drove from Montebello to Hacienda Heights every day to go to school.
Why did you guys move?
And my grandmother was sick, and so we were taking care of my grandmother. My grandfather had just died. And we were a practicing Catholic family. So every day on the way to school, each one of the kids had to do a decade of the rosary on the way to school.
Wow.
I didn't completely appreciate it as a teenager. I mostly wanted to get through it and turn on Rick Dees in the morning. But as an adult in my prayer life now, it's something that it's a gift that my mom gave me. It's something that I do with my daughters.
Five kids.
I'm one of five, yes.
Where are you in the birth order?
Where do you think?
Number one.
Nope. I'm the poor, unloved middle child constantly striving for my parents' attention.
And is that working now that you've got this job?
My parents and I have an amazing relationship. They are two of my best friends. When I was pregnant with my first child, they moved in with us in Simi Valley. And my parents, I'm pretty sure, like my husband more than they like me. And he, you know, they don't like mess around. They call him their favorite son.
So when you were elected party chair, a lot was made of the fact that you were the first female Latina. But tell us a little bit about the Latina side of your family. Your paternal grandfather was from Mexico, I think.
Yes.
Tell us about him.
So my grandfather was born in Mexico. My grandmother was born here on a farm in Chino, but she lived most of her childhood in Mexicali. And my grandfather came here around when he was 8 years old.
And what were the circumstances?
Their family was moving to California. My grandfather went on to be an educator. He worked for LAUSD for, gosh, it seemed like 50 years.
Like a K-12 teacher?
Or? He was a high school teacher, and he worked at Garfield and Roosevelt. and very, very involved in the community. And my grandmother was about 4'11". And really a no-nonsense type of woman.
That's, I think, how big my Armenian grandma was. You didn't need to mess with her.
What's an example of her being no-nonsense?
We'd get in trouble in her front yard, and she'd throw rocks. she didn't mess around.
Is this the one you guys moved in with?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes,
so was that heritage like a part of your life growing up? I mean, obviously you guys were Catholic, but was the Mexican part in cooking or other ways?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I mean, frijoles and rosa, you know, four times a week.
Did you guys speak Spanish at all?
So my grandmother mostly spoke Spanish. That's what she felt comfortable with. My grandfather, I don't ever recall him really speaking Spanish. He was very much, you know, I'm here and I want to be a part of the community here. And especially, you know, working in the education community, that was something that was very important to him. I remember one time, you know, being one of five children, there isn't a lot of one-on-one time that you get. But one time, my tata and I were alone at my grandparents' house, and we went to Chinatown, and we bought a bunch of groceries, and we came back to the house. And he's like, okay, now we're going to make Mexican chop suey. And so I asked him, I said, tata, what's the difference between Mexican chop suey and regular chop suey? And he said, a Mexican's making it. So that was the kind of guy he was.
Yeah, that's funny. My grandpa was the same. Like, didn't want to speak Spanish because they know what it's like to have that kind of change.
So where did you first get the political bug? Like, was it in high school or college?
Yeah. So, because you, like, came straight out of college into politics. We'll get there, but, like.
Yeah, so it was actually on those car rides. Those car rides from Montebello to Hacienda Heights.
Like, what was it about those rides?
The fact that we drove from Montebello to Hacienda Heights every day because failed policies in Montebello. These are the people that are running things over there and the Democrats. And, you know, we'd get off of the 60 freeway right there at Hacienda. We'd turn up Hacienda and go to Colima. And right on the corner of Hacienda Colima, there was a Republican Party headquarters. So one day we had finished our prayers and I asked my mom, Mom, I want to go there and volunteer after school.
How old were you?
Like 16.
Okay.
Wow. And did either any of your siblings have that?
No. They were all athletes. In fact, she said, your brother has football on Thursdays. You can go after school. I'll pick you up when he's done with football, and we'll drive back home to Montebello after that.
And what did the party think when this 16-year-old girl walks in and says, I want to volunteer?
I met an amazing woman there. Her name is Martha House. And Martha House is just another fantastic human being. She took me under her wing. She empowered me. She made me feel important to the cause. And she just really helped shape the direction of what I was going to do. And I didn't know that I'd go out and run campaigns. I thought at one point I was going to be a lawyer or something like that, because what do you do with a political science degree, right?
Well, we're looking at it apparently.
So, but like when you're in it, when you're in that political science, those political science courses, you're getting all of the theory. You're not learning about running campaigns. You're not even learning a whole lot about the parties. Some of it you're learning about, you know, presidential debates and campaigns and things like
that. Electoral math.
Exactly. But you're not learning about what it takes to go and out and actually run a campaign.
Yeah. So you went to Cal State Northridge. Sounds like you majored in poli sci.
I did.
And then it seems like by the dates, like right out of college, you ended up chairing the Ventura Republican Party. Is that?
I was the county executive director in 2003. You know, 2003, we had a fantastic relationship between, you know, we did the recall, and Governor Schwarzenegger was just a great partner with the state party. He and the chairman at the time, Duff Sundheim, just did a fantastic job of working together with Leader McCarthy and Senator Brulte and making sure that they were all raising the money into the party. And we just did a fantastic job of it. So they have what they call the County Executive Director Program. And the County Executive Director, there's 14 counties where about 80% of Republicans live. And if we had a county executive director there year round, we could have activities for these Republicans to be engaged in. So I was the county executive director for Ventura.
So you became the CEO of Trailblazers. Mm-hmm. Talk about that, what it is, and like what's in your, are you still the CEO?
I am not. We're actually, I'm very excited. We're going to be moving Trailblazers in-house at the state party. The overarching goal, I would say, is candidate development, candidate recruitment, and helping them win. And so, yes, we are very specific in our goals. We didn't want there to just be kingmakers. And we saw that, where there was no organization that could be kind of a third party validator. We worked in conjunction with the party, but we weren't a party organization. So having an organization that was very you either make the goals or you don't. You have the numbers that you need on social media. You've raised the dollars that you've needed. You've put together your list. You have your finance plan, or you don't. So having that subjective versus objective type of viewing of benchmarks and milestones for candidates, and it varies from district to district, but within one district, all of the candidates are on the same footing. So we could say wholeheartedly to our donor community, once they've reached the Pathfinder, the Rising Star, or then that coveted Trailblazers tier, that they are doing all of the things that they are supposed to be doing, and this is a good place where you should spend your money. And that's what we focused on.
And to what extent is one of the goals to make, you know, people in the party, candidates and others, a more diverse group? Because when you look at who's gone through it so far, it's, I think, 12 out of 13 are men, and I think all but three are white.
Well, currently, I mean, you know, we had some losses, you know, with individuals like Assemblywoman Baker, Assemblywoman Young Kim. We were very, very grateful to get Senator Chang back. So, you know, there was certainly some downside to some of those losses because they took away some of that diversity to our delegation of legislators. But also, I think that, you know, you started to talk about some of the headlines when I was elected. First female, first Latina, first millennial.
Are you a millennial?
Best hair. It depends on which calendar.
What does Brulte say about
you
that?
Look at. I think the one that gives me most competition is Tom DelBacara. it depends on the calendar.
Right?
Some say 1980s not. Sometimes they say it's zennial. So whatever.
But what difference does it make that you're young? You are young. You're younger than previous chairs. What difference does that make?
I think all of it makes a difference because you can. There's been a narrative about our party, and the point I was getting to, and I'll get back to the narrative, but the point I was getting to was that there wasn't a lot of conversation. There's a little bit of conversation, but our state board as a whole, we have 23 members of our state board, almost half of which are women. We've got four Latinos on our board. We have an African-American, a Taiwanese immigrant as our vice chair. We have a kick-ass Punjabi Indian-American attorney as
We've
our
had Harmeet on our show.
We've got two openly gay men that have been on my board since I was elected. And so, you know, the diversity within our leadership doesn't stop with me. And it's important because there has been a narrative. There's been a narrative about our party that we are the party of old, white, sometimes angry men. And when you look at the party leadership, you can see that that isn't the case. And it is a new day in the California Republican Party. And that's why it's important.
If you're just joining us, I'm Marisa Lagos here with Scott Schaefer. And today on The Breakdown, we have California GOP Chair Jessica Patterson. So what then does success look like? Because given everything you're talking about, I think the current president and some of his policies do pose some challenges for you guys potentially to make inroads in different populations in California. So are you really focused on electoral victory? Is it about registration numbers? Like in a year or two, how are you going to measure how well you've done?
Yeah, I think that there are different measures of success. It's going to be, we have a new Mendoza line, right? I'm a baseball person. And, you know, there are districts that we are having to look at that we've never had to look at before. And so holding on to what we have is going to be critical to what we need to do. And there are a couple of places where I believe that we have huge opportunities. One, because I don't think that some of the candidates that won last time around should have won. And
what do you mean?
Oh, I mean some of the Democrats. I don't think that Assemblywoman Cotty Petrie-Norris is a very good representative of her area. I think that's a perfect example where we have two fantastic candidates, Mayor Diane Dixon from Newport Beach and Kelly Earnby, who's a prosecutor from Huntington Beach, two great candidates that can run in that seat.
And how in 2020 do you do that, given the stuff I just alluded to with the national campaign? Like, how as party chair are you going to be talking to, say, Latino communities about the wall and the asylum ban and the things that, you know, I think are maybe somebody might agree with you on some things but disagree on that. Like, how are you framing some of these really divisive national conversations?
I think a lot of it is bringing the focus back to what's happening here in California. And that's what we're constantly trying to do. We get the 3 a.m. tweet. Everybody wants to talk about the 3 a.m. tweet. But at the end of the day, we have a K through 12 education that ranks somewhere between 44th and 47th. We have a homeless crisis that has become epidemic proportions. We have, affordability that, you know, that is the number one issue that people recognize when they talk about it. You know, we have an outward migration of people leaving of about a million. We're likely going to lose a congressional seat because of that. People aren't leaving our country. They're leaving our state.
But in terms of what Marisa was saying, like reaching out, diversifying the party, speaking to Latino communities, immigrant communities who have been in, you know, large measure turned off by some of the rhetoric, not only of President Trump, but of the party on, you know, going all the way back to Prop 187, which is now 25 years ago. So how do you talk about those issues in ways? Because you're talking about state issues, but, you know, if it's a congressional campaign, for example, people are thinking about Washington.
Yeah. So first, I don't ever use the word outreach. I believe that that word implies that you have to reach out to someone. I use the word engagement a lot. We have organizations around the state, organizations like Grow Elect, organizations like the California Women's Leadership Association, the Marian Bergeson Series. Those organizations focus on getting Republicans elected at the local level who are Republican Latinos and women. I was just at Doherty Farms about a month ago, maybe 2 months ago, and John Doherty hosted what he calls Farm Friends Day at the farm. And he had between 600 and 800 farm workers and their family members. And they have a big barbecue. And he asked me to be the keynote speaker. And we went and we talked about the issues that are important to him. And he said, you know what, Jess, they've never seen someone who looks and sounds like them be a Republican.
So do you just not bring up immigration, though?
I mean, if someone asks me the question, we'll have the conversation. Absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's important to have those conversations. But at the end of the day, a lot of these communities, some of our most vulnerable communities around the state, they're not leading their best lives because, you know, Democrats are helping them to do that. And they're not voting for Democrats because they're helping them to lead their best lives. They're voting for Democrats because Democrats have showed up and Democrats have made them feel like they care about their problems. And right now, they don't think that Republicans care about their problems. And that's what we need to do.
So we're talking about bringing new people into the party, but I want to ask you about some divisions within the California party. We've seen...
There aren't any.
Of course not.
Completely united.
I mean, you brought up Arnold Schwarzenegger and how well the party and he worked together when he was first elected in 2003. We don't need to rehash Schwarzenegger's terms. I think in some ways he was a disappointment to a lot of, you know, Republicans in California. But he did hit on some issues that have in some circles gone beyond partisan politics, like around climate change, like around some of these issues. But what we've seen is in the state legislature, when someone like Chad Mays reaches across the aisle, he gets ousted as leader. Often, I would say, having watched Republican politics, the people running the legislative leadership might be even further to the right than a lot of the party. So how do you want to reach to the Chad Mays of the world and bring them back into the fold, the never Trumpers? Like, how are you going to handle that division?
So I don't think Assemblyman Mays is out of the fold.
Okay.
We work together very, very well. And that is exactly what I ran on. I ran on being a big tent Republican. And when I did my announcement, I rolled out, I think, with 17 assembly members. Mm-hmm. There's no one that I left off of that list. Uh-huh. Anyone who was supporting me was on that list. And I think, you know, right now we're the third largest party in the state. And I have said it time and time again. If we continue down that path with the circular firing squad, we're going to be the fourth largest party. So I would rather have someone like Assemblywoman Baker, who voted with Republicans 89% of the time, than someone like Rebecca Bauer Cahan, who will vote with Republicans 0% of the time. I'm a big tent Republican, and I don't spend time talking badly about other Republicans.
So you mentioned in your words, kick-ass Punjabi attorney, who is the RNC committee woman from California, Harmeet Dhillon. And, you know, she was kind of led the charge against Chad Mays when he not only got Republicans to vote for the cap and trade extension, but also took a photograph with Governor Jerry Brown. So How do you deal with that division? Yeah. And when you talk like, about big tent, I mean, it's more than just gender and sexual orientation and ethnicity, right? It's also ideas.
Yeah, absolutely. So number one, I try my hardest to lead by example. I don't think that I ever talk about other Republicans badly. And so
it's the old Reagan doctrine.
I try really, really hard.
And you're a mom of young kids. So. a lot of practice with that, right?
I think that does, you know, it's one of those, quills that I have. You know, it's something that I can turn to a lot. And it doesn't always work. And I know that we are a party of individuals. And there's only one Republican that I agree with 100% of the time. And that's me.
I was wondering who that was. Yeah.
And so, I really try to lead by example on it. And, calm people down when I can. Right.
I'm curious, this is kind of a fanciful question, but if you were, the Empress of California and you can just wave your wand and change a policy or a law or something like that, like what would you do? Like what would you get rid of or add to what's already there?
I mean, there's a list.
I mean, top three.
I mean, I think CEQA is one of the biggest hurdles that we face here.
Environmental rules. And
we have this homeless crisis here. And it's just so incredibly sad to see and to watch. And
but how would that get fixed? I mean, that's a complicated question. But
I know.
The Republican solution,
right?
To that?
I think we need to build more housing. We can't do that unless there is some incentive to actually. If we make building houses so hard, it's going to be hard. The governor has put forth all of these amazing goals, but we're falling short on all of them because developers don't want to go and do it. Mm-hmm. It's just too hard to do business here.
So we'd like to end with something a little lighter. What do you do for fun
in your free time,
I'm sure you have a lot?
Because the only thing we've talked about you doing for fun in high school was joining the Republican Party.
So I'm not a very good golfer. But I do like to go out and golf, and I only get to do it a few times a year. And then I really like being on boats, just on the water. One of the things that my husband and I try to do any place that we're at is we try and take the girls out kayaking. And we get a double kayak, and both my girls are very tiny girls. And usually Maddie's up front with me and Abby's with Wes, and we get a double kayak. And every single place that we go, they're like, you're not going to be able to fit four people in a double kayak. But it always works. I don't know what I'm going to do when one of the girls is too big because I don't know if I could do the kayak all by myself. But I like being out on the water.
Awesome. Jessica Patterson, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for coming in.
And that'll do it for this edition of Political Breakdown, a production of KQED Public Radio. Our producer is Guy Marzorati. And I got to say, last week, we did not credit Jeremy Siegel, who produced that episode with LA Mayor Eric Garcetti. So a belated thanks to Jeremy.
Thanks, Jeremy. Our engineers here at KQED include Katie McMurrin and Seal Muller, and a KPCC Alex Gonzalez engineered our interview with Jessica Patterson. Our leadership team includes Vinny Tong, Ethan Lindsay, and Holly Kernan. I'm Scott Schaefer. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm at Scott Schaefer.
And I'm Marisa Lagos. However you're listening, please don't forget to subscribe to The Breakdown on Apple Podcasts or wherever you find your audio. And while you're there, leave us a review or rating or tell us what poll questions you want out
there.
Send
us cookies.
You can find me on Twitter. I'm at MLagos. That is a wrap for this week's Political Breakdown from KQED. Thanks for listening.